Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio. Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. On today's show, we're going to be covering a lot about the White Rabbit skits and where they may be leading. And if we are going to see its culmination at Extreme Rules, we'll be doing a little bit of our SmackDown review. We'll be talking a little bit about some AEW problems and also some potential returns to the WWE. Let's start with the AEW, though, because these problems are somewhat being disputed, and I can't get any clear information on this. But here's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that the AEW, especially in their East Coast swing to do their television tapings, were having a very, very hard time selling tickets. And one of the numbers I got was staggering, and it was for, I believe, November 4th, they're going to be in Atlantic City. And I realized that that's a month away. And I realized that, you know, the last-minute ticket sales are a thing, but AEW always used to sell out. Remember when they sold out minutes after they announced? Oh, AEW is going to be here. And before you could even get a phone in your hand, oh, never mind trying to find tickets, they're sold out. I'm being told that the 11-4 Atlantic City event, which is a TV taping, I think, has sold 750 tickets. 750 as of Friday. Folks, I mean, that's a disaster. And I'm being told other places in New York are coming in at about 1,300, 1,400. This is approximately the number that our local, it's not too local for me, but local enough, Civic Center holds about 1,500 people. And very small events normally take place there. WWE house shows used to. They don't even do that so much anymore. Now it's mostly indie show type things with, you know, some guests that are a little bit more famous. That's not good news. I mean, at the end of the day, I know that you make your money off TV deals and you make your money off merchandising, and you don't necessarily need to make your money off live shows. But if you can't get a crowd for a TV taping, if you honestly are doing under 1,000 tickets for a show that's coming up in the beginning of November, that's insanity. That's absolute insanity, especially for an organization with the type of payroll this organization has. And the long and the short of that is that you don't have draws. This is what I was trying to tell everyone. The AEW hasn't been a traveling organization all that much. You know, they don't go out like the WWE used to and still does to a certain extent. They do their TV tapings here and there and fine, but this organization is not going to be able to literally tour and do 1,000 people. That's not going to pay for the travel, cameraman. That's a disaster. Now, in all fairness, the company's disputing it to a certain extent, saying, well, the tickets just barely went on sale and there was some trouble. What I'm hearing is this. I heard from some fans, yeah, they're selling 700 tickets because they want $150 or $175 a ticket. Fans in this economy, that's not happening, folks. That's not happening. That's a pipe dream, especially when you don't have major, major draws. Who are you going to put on that card? If MJF's not on every one of them, forget it. So this is a real problem. And this is something that Tony Khan's not going to be able to hide. I mean, they can give away tickets, which a lot of organizations do. The WWE does it too, to pack their pay-per-views and pack their taped shows and everything. The WWE hands out tickets. ECW used to hand out tickets. I was handed tickets by Paul Heyman and told, go to the local mall and give them away if you have to, because we're having a big TV taping at your local fairground building, and we need the place to look packed. So everyone does that. But man, less than 1,000 tickets a month away from the event? Normally, a promoter will cancel an event like that. Like if you have a band playing and you got a 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 seat arena or more, and you sold 700 tickets and there's only a month to go, they don't take that chance. So if this is true, Mike, this is not good news for AEW, because it means they're not. And let's remember, this is the same organization that in these same areas did 5,000, 6,000 people and sold out the tickets in hours. And now you're 700 tickets down with a month to go. That's alarming.
That is alarming. And think about this, Marcus. There's a reason why the NWA really doesn't go on tour. There's a reason why Lucha Underground didn't go on tour. And there's a reason why early on in Impact TNA, we said, well, they're not getting what we think they're getting, because what were they doing? They were at Universal Studios, right? And they were handing out the tickets to anybody who entered the park, right? Entered that amusement park, right? Anybody. Yes. Anybody who wanted a ticket to go to whatever TNA show that was there, the TV taping, they got a ticket. And they were free. They were cooking the books, in other words, by handing out the tickets.
Well, no, there's no doubt about that. And if you recall, that's why the crowds were terrible for them in Orlando, because there were a lot of people who just went in and said, oh, we'll go in and see what the show's about. They didn't know any of the wrestlers. They weren't particularly wrestling fans. There were people who came down there and said, it's free. Let's go in and see what's going on. That hurt them. But this is a little bit of a different situation, because you shouldn't be going backwards. In other words, if you start your company and you say, wow, I sold out 5,000 tickets, 6,000 tickets, basically sold out an arena, 2 hours. And then next year you come back and you can't sell 1,000, then you're going backwards. You're going backwards. Any business will tell you that. If you're in the, I don't know, whatever business you want to be in, if you're in the sales business and you say, my sales last year on this date near Christmas holiday was this much, and now it's literally a third of that or a fourth of that, you're going backwards, which means that fans are not as interested as they were in coming to see the live events. I warned everybody about this. I said a lot of AEW's fan base are fair weather fans. They're, it was cool. It's cool for this month. Let's all go to the Hot Topic and get a Young Bucks t-shirt or an AEW t-shirt, because this is new and cool and fashionable. But the new, cool, and fashionable, much like a fidget spinner, wears off after a year, and then all of a sudden those fans find different things that are cool. Oh, now it's cool to do something else, and we're going to go get a t-shirt about that. And that's why I said Tony Khan has to appease the real, honest-to-God wrestling fans. And they're not 16-year-olds and 17-year-olds who are fickle. They're your long-term wrestling fan who's made a commitment to, I'm a lifelong wrestling fan. And if you don't grab them, if you just grab those people who, if tomorrow somebody comes out with another federation that has a few of the indie guys that they think are cool, all of a sudden they're like, let's go get their t-shirt. They're new and cool. It's whatever the flavor of the month is with a lot of these guys. And I warned you that AEW has a lot of those fans. A lot of those fans that are more at home at a Comic-Con than they are in a professional wrestling environment in an arena somewhere. And eventually something else is going to come grab their attention, whether it's, you know, a new fad or a new federation or whatever the hell it is, and it's going to drive them away from that. And they're going to say, well, that was cool last year. That was cool the year before. That's old news now. Warned everybody about that. Play to your base, because your base is always going to be there at the end, and at least it gives you a fair idea of what you're going to be able to count on. But if your base is under 1,000 people for a live event, now, you could say, well, if the Civic Center is 1,500 people and you sold 1,000 tickets, that's pretty good. But nah, he's booked places that are 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 seats. You can't sell 700 tickets to an 8,000-seat arena, Todd. I mean, it just doesn't work.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with AEW and... Lately, they haven't been selling tons of tickets. Last time they sold tons of tickets was like almost a year ago at the UBS Arena, the new home for the Islanders. And that's the last time they actually sold tickets in the Northeast.
Yeah, I mean, this is a real problem. Again, they're denying it to a certain extent, and they're making some excuses, but we're going to see. We'll see if they can fill it up. And if they do fill it up, we'll see if they fill it up with freebies or if they legitimately sell. I don't know. But I do know that those are staggering numbers. You're 30 days away from an event, and you've sold 750 tickets. You can't – that's a warning sign. That's a warning sign. So now we got to see how seriously Tony Khan takes this. Because his nature is to just say, oh, that's no big deal. There's a million other reasons why we didn't, and everything's fine, and everybody loves us, and everybody thinks we're wonderful. Instead of taking a good hard look and saying, okay, hold the phone. What the hell is going on? Well, it didn't help that you lost CM Punk. It didn't help that you lost the Young Bucks. It didn't help that you lost Kenny Omega. It didn't help that you're considered now toxic by some people, and it doesn't help that people are walking out. It doesn't help that you've released Buddy Murphy. They now say they've come to an agreement on the release of Buddy Murphy. How many people said to me, you're wrong, Buddy Murphy's just taking a break? Is he taking a break now? He's taking a damn long one. He's gone. Malakai Black is back only because he found out he couldn't go to the WWE, and I don't care what he says. He can get on the telephone now and tell me that's not true, and I'll tell him, you're full of crap. Because you made a video saying, I asked for my release. And then you get on another video and say, I don't know where anybody gave the idea that I asked for my release. I just wanted a little time off. Well, maybe they got the idea from your own mouth, because that's what you said. And then you found out, oh, I can't run to Triple H. I guess I'm stuck in AEW then, so I'll make another video saying I never wanted to leave. I don't know. Now we got FTR complaining, apparently. FTR saying we do still work here. Be nice if we were booked once in a while. But this is every single thing that's happening right now. I warned them about when they first started this federation. I said, you got to watch this stuff. It's going to come back to bite you if you hire too many people and you try to appease a mob that's going to be fickle.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And think about it. Well, 2 years ago, what was going on about 2 years ago this time? What was the WWE and Vince McMahon doing? He was hiring everybody he could, Mr. X, Y, and Mrs. Z. You know, he was hiring everybody he could to basically keep people away from AEW, right? Even though he had,
yep.
He didn't have enough time for him, he was spending millions and millions and millions of dollars hiring people just to keep them away. And he basically learned his lesson. And here's the deal. Tony Khan better watch himself. Not only is his contract with the TV station goes up, but what happens if his dad says, I'm cutting you off?
Yeah, well, that's another story altogether, isn't it? But, I mean, listen, if your style of booking is every week you say, I have a big surprise. I have a fabulous new free agent that I've just signed. He's the biggest name in pro wrestling. I have a huge announcement. Every week, that's your style of booking. Pretty soon, no matter what you say, it's not that big of a deal. Because people are like, well, you get one of those every week. It's not special if it's every week. And I think we're starting to see the cracks in the armor of Tony Khan not really being able, as a fan, quote-unquote a fan, to successfully run a wrestling company. And that's why you did need people. I know that Jim Cornette was saying, well, you can't put the Young Bucks as executive vice presidents. They don't have any experience in business. Now, you're right, but what they did have experience in is pro wrestling. And Cody Rhodes, too. And they were able to say, well, you know, this is how you would conduct this particular thing, or this is how you'd work this. Tony Khan don't know. He's hired a bunch of people backstage, and I think I'm going to be very honest with you. I'm sure there are people, I know there are people, in AEW who are glad to be there, working hard, busting their ass, and trying to make a name for that company. I absolutely know for sure there are. I also absolutely know for sure there are people who are laughing their ass off saying this money mark is paying me to do fuck all, and all I got to do is show up and say I'm all elite, and I sit around at catering and eat his food and laugh behind his back and say, what an idiot, I'm getting rich off him, and he has no idea what he's doing. I know there are people like that too. And those are the people you got to eliminate. When did the shit hit the fan? Oh, the shit hit the fan right after you hired CM Punk, which, oh, what show told you not to do that? What show said that was a huge mistake? This one. Told you, you're going to get a ratings bump for a while. You're going to get big headlines for a while. Then you're going to get trouble in the dressing room. That's going to lead to more people being disgruntled. That's going to lead to people leaving. That's going to lead to people taking sides. And the next thing you know, everybody's at each other's throats. Who said that? You know, you don't put poison in the Kool-Aid. Simple as that. And that's, I kind of think that's what you did. So, you know, listen, I'm rooting for them. I hope they can pull their way out of this. But you know how they're going to have to pull their way out of this? Through hard work from the people who really want to be there and really honestly want to make this federation succeed. And I can name you some names. John Moxley, I think, wants to make this federation succeed very badly. I think Chris Jericho legitimately wants this thing to be huge. At one point, he said, we're going to take over and be the number one. I don't think Chris Jericho's mailing it in. Certainly, some of the younger guys aren't mailing it in. They want this to be successful. But there's a lot of people feeding at the tit, okay, and saying, I don't have to do anything. I'm making big money, and I just sit around. They put my picture on a thing that says so-and-so's all elite, and then I do nothing and collect my money. Maybe give a little advice once in a while. You got to nip that. Right now, you are like that big tomato plant that has all them suckers. And you know what you do with a tomato plant that has a whole bunch of suckers? You got to clip the suckers off so the tomatoes can grow. Well, that's exactly what you got to do now. You got to get rid of the hangers-on. You got to get rid of the people who just want to collect a big fat salary for doing nothing. Get rid of them. What are you afraid of? They're going to run back to the WWE and do what? The WWE don't want them. Get rid of them. And start running with the guys who are busting their ass determined to make you something. And stop worrying about the big announcement or the next big free agent I'm signing or the next contract that I'm going to. We're going to merge with this company and that company and this company, and we're going to hold mutual shows. Forget all that. Dance with who brung you. Get your guys together. You have to know who your guys are that you can rely on. You're the manager, so to speak, of this team, Tony. And you got to know which guys you want there in crucial situations. You got to know which guys have your back. You got to know which guys are determined and busting their ass for you. And you got to know which guys are lazy and just feeding off your money. Get rid of them. No law says you have to be the retirement home for old wrestlers. No law says you have to supply wrestlers with a living because they once made a name somewhere for themselves. No law says that. Go with the guys who are going to be your future. Because you're not going to have one. You can't go from selling 5,000 tickets in the same goddamn area in an hour to selling 779 with the show 30 days away. I think that's what he's got to do to right the ship, Mike.
Absolutely. And I give you an example of what you're talking about. Baton Rouge, Louisiana, they have this thing called the River Center. Now, the River Center has three different arenas, all right? And they're basically stacked on top of each other, but three different arenas, right? One is like a 20,000-seat arena where basically things like the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus went, right?
Mm-hmm.
The next one, and WCW at the time, back in the 80s, the NWA, WCW showed up there back in the 80s, and so did the WWE, WWF at the time. Then the next one up is the arena where it's a basically no more than a 10,000-seat arena where ECW ended up going because they knew they couldn't sell out that bottom arena, so they chose the next level arena, right? And then there was one above that was basically a 1,000-seat arena maybe. But that's what happened. That's how this thing was. That's how this River Center is set up back down there in Baton Rouge. And that's the different wrestling companies that came into Baton Rouge over the years made the business choice to set up in whichever center they felt they could sell out. Right? That's what Tony Khan has to – he's got to make the choice. Do you want to be a big-time thing? Then bring in draws that will sell out the 20,000-seat arenas, right? Bring in those draws.
I don't think he has it. I just don't think he has it. He can't sell 5,000. And I don't blame Tony Khan because if I sold out an arena in an hour – and I'm going back to that arena, or at least in that area of that arena, my assumption is I'll do it again. And this must be a big slap in the face when you say, what? I sold that whole arena out in an hour and a half last time, 30 days from the event, and I sold 780 tickets. That's got to be a big wake-up call. And that's what I'm saying. AEW started very fast, and maybe too fast. They should have been doing 1,500-seat arenas. They should have been doing civic centers and things. No, right away he said, I'm going to sell out. Remember when Jim Cornette said there's no possible way you're going to sell 20,000 seats unless you get CM Punk back or something? And the Young Bucks said, you watch us. And they did. They did. But that was then and this is now. And back then, you were new. You were the hot thing. You were the fidget spinner of professional wrestling. Oh, this is new and hip, and all of the new wrestling fans, we're going to leave the WWE, and we're going to go watch them, and this is going to be our new thing, and you're in our club if you want to be in it, go be an AEW fan. Vince, out with the old, in with the new. Well, now Tony Khan knows how it feels, because now people are saying out with the old, in with the new. Oh, Triple H is taking control of WWE. Let's go back there. We like Triple H. Fickle. And that's why I told you from the very beginning, if you're going to succeed, you have to play to the real ardent wrestling fans, the diehard wrestling fans, who if you catch, they're never going to leave you. But you didn't. You played to the fad guys. You played to the Comic-Con crowd. You played to the casual fan who said, oh, I'm not a big wrestling fan. I haven't watched a lot of wrestling, but this is cool, and my friends all like it. And it's like, you know, to be hip, you got to do this. You can't play to them. And you can't play to the indie fans either, because how many, you know, what is an indie crowd? A few hundred people? Now, originally you signed Moxley and Jericho and some of these other guys, and these guys have names. And I was saying, you're doing the right thing. But then you got carried away, and you just started signing everyone, regardless of what they had to offer. Is there a reason that you signed the Big Show? Exactly what has he done for you? Has he sold one ticket? Has he convinced one fan to tune in? I don't think so. And then you just signed anybody. It became like a ridiculous thing where some fan would mention, you know, who's good on the indie circuit? And Tony Khan's like, I'm going to sign him. You're at critical mass right now. If you can't up these ticket sales, I don't know what to tell you. Because if you can't sell out an arena for a TV taping, your TV company's going to take a look at you and say, what up? What the hell's going on? And you haven't proven, by the way, that you can break a million on a regular basis. You did it through controversy after the big fight between CM Punk and the Young Bucks. You did it a few weeks in a row because there was that big controversy. If I wonder if they're going to address it and what's going to happen. And it's always got to be, we got a major event here, a huge announcement, a brand new star that you're not going to believe who it is. There's always got to be some kind of trick to get the fans to tune in instead of just saying, we're just having our show, tune in. That's it. No, every week Tony Khan makes that announcement. Don't miss this show. I got a huge, gigantic, colossal surprise. Don't miss this show. It's going to rock the wrestling world what I'm about to announce. Don't miss this show. I've signed the hottest free agent in the market. You're not going to believe who's all elite. Every week it's that. And after a while, fans get used to the new improved flavor. And you say, this tastes just exactly like the old flavor. So that's the problem. I don't think Tony Khan has the confidence that the people he has now on the roster can draw huge amounts of people. And maybe he's right. But I warned you about that. I told you, I said, if you're putting all your eggs in the basket of the Young Bucks, I've been to plenty of independent shows that the Young Bucks were on, and the shows weren't even sold out. If they're such big draws, how come when they're in your local neighborhood at an indie event, you didn't sell all the tickets? Think of it in terms of this. If the Young Bucks are such a huge draw, or Kenny Omega is such a huge draw, how come when he showed up on the indie circuits in local, especially in American venues, they didn't sell out? I mean, I guarantee you, if any of those Young Buck appearances or Kenny Omega appearances or Hangman Adam Page appearances in indie events had have been, oh, and by the way, guess who's singing the national anthem? Ozzy Osbourne. Sold out. Couldn't pack one more person in the place. You know why? Because Ozzy Osbourne's a draw. He's not a wrestler, but he's a draw, and he'll sell tickets. People will be like, holy shit, Ozzy's singing the national anthem. I got to go see that. Even if it sucks. There you go. That's the draw power I'm talking about. The Bucks didn't have it. They never had it. Cody Rhodes didn't have it either. I sat in an arena. It wasn't even an arena. I sat in a Knights of Columbus hall that Cody and Brandi Rhodes were headlining an event for an indie federation. And maybe there were 200 people. Maybe. So don't tell me, oh, my God, you know, what would have happened if that Knights of Columbus said, oh, man, you know, The Undertaker's going to be here. Not going to wrestle. He's going to get in the ring and talk. You would have had standing room only. You would have had a lot of traffic jams. There would have been people fighting each other to get in the building. The firemen would have had to come in here and clear the building for a public gathering way more than the building could hold. That's a draw. You don't have that. And, Mike, I mean, I'm looking at the AEW roster, and I don't see that big draw. At one time, perhaps it was Chris Jericho, but he's been there a while now. And now it's like, Jericho's there. So it's not like people are flooding in to see him.
Right. And think about it this way. You know, and I know this is a political show, but think about it this way. You look at, well, let's call him the alleged president, but let's look at President Obama when he was running versus President Trump. Why was President Biden allegedly getting less than 10,000 people, maybe less than 1,000 people at rallies, whereas President Trump was getting 15, 20, 25,000, and that's not even including people that couldn't get into the building because of fire codes, right?
Right.
Because,
it's the same thing all over. It's draw. It's draw power. Nobody wants to sit around, even if you're going to vote for Joe Biden, nobody wants to sit around and listen to him talk because it's not fun. It's not fun. People wanted to listen to Trump talk because regardless of whether you wanted to vote for him or not, you were like, it's fun. See, that's the difference. That's the difference. This is a really critical time for AEW. I think they're back on their heels. And I hope they pull out of this. But if for any reason they don't, you can pinpoint the moment that this whole house of cards collapsed. And there are two critical ones. You lost Cody Rhodes, and you hired CM Punk. Simple as that. Anyway, let's get on to a little bit of WWE here, because, of course, this week's SmackDown held more clues to the identity or identities of people involved in this White Rabbit campaign. And that's kind of what it is. And I'm telling you, the WWE is back on their heels because they had no idea that this was going to be as successful as it is. This has reached a new level of success on social media. It's the only thing people are talking about. And there's the wildest theories you've ever heard in your life. And the WWE's eaten up every single minute of it. That's why they're not confirming or denying anything. It's Karrion Kross is going to be a part of the Wyatt Six. There's going to be a Wyatt Six Foundation, and it's going to be Karrion Kross, and it's going to be Baron Corbin, and it's going to be this one and that one. WWE's just like, okay. All right. They love it. They love that everybody's discussing it. They could not ask for more than that. And they're purposely, by the way, trying to lure you into thinking it may be other people. I understand the Baron Corbin thing. Baron Corbin got into a car. Somebody said something to him and said, "What the hell's happened to you?" Sound like it was JBL to me. And it looked like JBL's car. And Corbin disappeared. But I get it. There's a wolf in this week's QR code video. And he's by himself, so technically he's a lone wolf. Well, the lone wolf was Baron Corbin. I get that. And I get that one of the coordinates sent you to a place called Corbin something. I get that, too. But I think a lot of that was done on purpose. Because at the end of the day, what this cartoon showed you was pigs and a slaughterhouse and wolf in sheep's clothing. And what did the wolf say to the three little pigs? "Let me in." That's what the wolf said to the three little pigs. So you saw the wolf and you saw the three little pigs. And if you followed the nursery rhyme of the three little pigs, he said, "Let me in, let me in." Well, that's what Bray Wyatt always said. There was also a Morse code signal, which roughly translated to "Aziel lives," which is a demon, Aziel. Azazel, whatever his name is. And then there was actually a distorted voice. And if you sped up the distorted voice, it certainly sounds like Bray Wyatt's voice. Saying something about, "I'm the path to chaos or the road to ruin or whatever it happened to be. There is no doubt that this is Bray Wyatt. The only doubt that remains is, will he come alone? Or is there a greater plan? Well, here's the thing, folks. There might be a greater plan. Bray Wyatt by himself is, he needs somebody to lead. He needs like a cult around him. Even if it's just Alexa Bliss, he needs someone to work off of. But I'm not sure about right away. I mean, do you really want to introduce him with a pack of people? And then the effect of him coming back is like, oh, well, yeah, he's here, but so is a whole bunch of other people. Oh, he's here, but he's attached to these people who already have feuds and things. I'm not so sure you want to do that right away. So I'm not so sure he's coming with anybody. I would say if he's coming with anyone at all, there's an outside chance it might be his brother, but that's about it. Alexa Bliss definitely going to be involved at some point, but I don't know when. If it's right away or they're going to play this off, I don't know. But I do know that the WWE is so happy with this QR code social media thing that they're now saying we're going to use this more often. Not for Bray Wyatt necessarily, but we're going to use this. We're definitely going to use this. And, of course, people pointing out that, yes, in the poster for Extreme Rules, you could clearly see the lantern. You clearly see the rocking chair. They've made it fairly obvious, Bray Wyatt, fairly obvious. And there probably will be some other surprises. He probably will eventually get a following of, I don't know if he's just going to be on his own character. But right now I can tell you this. They're not going to take Karrion Kross away from a feud. Or even put him in a feud and say, well, I'm already in a feud with Drew McIntyre, but I'm also now a disciple of Bray Wyatt, and then Scarlett is rendered useless, basically. They're not going to do that. Braun Strowman has already been introduced as a face, and he's obviously going to fight Almas. They're not going to do that. Baron Corbin would make no sense at all. The only one that would make any sense is Alexa, and maybe if they want to try to bring Bo Dallas back, it's been so long, if they bring him back in a different incantation, it could happen. But I think he's coming back alone for now. But yes, if you decipher everything from that last video, it clearly is meant to refer to the old Three Pigs nursery rhyme, "Let me in." That's what it's designed to point to. Now, I will say this. There is absolutely no way on God's green earth, and I'm not trying to be funny, and I'm not trying to be insulting. There's no way on God's green earth that any writer currently working for the WWE knows the name of a demon. Period. End of conversation. And couldn't Google it if they wanted to. That is Bray Wyatt 1,000%. 1,000%. And now that the WWE sees how effective these QR codes can be at driving people to videos, you know how many hits these videos are getting? And yes, people are watching them 10, 20 times because they're trying to pick up different clues. But they're getting millions of views. Millions. And that's all anybody's talking about. Nobody's talking about AEW right now. Nobody's talking about, I wonder what's happening with CM Punk. I wonder when Bucks are coming back. They're talking about the White Rabbit. And this is what I tried to explain to wrestling fans on this show 400,000 times. It's all about the entertainment value. It's not about how good your super kick is. It's not about how good your flying plancha is. Not about whether you can do 30-minute Ironman matches and barely sweat. It's about entertainment. It's about engaging the fans so they're actually interested in what you're doing. And Bray Wyatt hasn't stuck his nose out of that curtain yet and has already sold a shitload of T-shirts, drove social media references sky high for the WWE, got the entire wrestling world talking about it for better or worse. I mean, that shows the worth, creativity, Tom.
Absolutely, 100%. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, the WWE has hit. This is lightning in a bottle. If there ever was lightning in a bottle in the recent, you know, last few weeks, this is it. The fact that they're selling T-shirts because of it, there's more people talking about this Bray Wyatt thing than the whole, you know, debacle of AEW and CM Punk. Nobody cares. Everybody is focused, dead focused on the QR codes and little games that are involved, the little subliminal messages. It's absolutely awesome. And listen, I'm going to tell you, I told you last week, I bought the T-shirt.
Yeah.
It's going to take weeks to get here. It said buy it before the next event, so I did. I'm sure, you know, 200 million other people bought it as well. That's their goal. This is basically a marketing ploy to sell T-shirts and to get people involved in the storyline. Like, be a part of the storyline. Remember, ECW used to do that with their fans all the time. This is the first time in a long time where I feel like I'm a part of the storyline. And
it's sheer marketing of an individual, and I've never seen this. I'll tell you what, I have, since I was waddling around in diapers, I was a wrestling fan. And I'm being dead honest when I tell you, I have never seen an incident where a worker has sold a shit ton of T-shirts before they ever debuted. Now, AEW sold a shit ton of T-shirts before they made their debut, but that's a whole organization. And they had clearly stated their intent. We are coming with a big pay-per-view, and then we are going to have a regular show. And this is our federation, and this is our logo, so people got behind it. No one even knows for sure this is Bray Wyatt. And they've already sold a bunch. I've never seen a worker sell T-shirts without even being there. I've never seen a worker being able to drive social media interest to peak heights without even sticking his nose in front of a camera. This is something new. And this is why I fully agree with Triple H when he says a highly creative person with an extremely creative mind, especially one whose mind is going off like fireworks, and every minute is, I could do this and that and this and that, and how about this and how about that, is very hard to deal with. Because you got to rein in all those thoughts and say, how do we rein in some of these thoughts to make them viable? And by the time you're reining in those thoughts, they got 400 more people like that. I understand. Highly creative people are challenging to work with. But you want them a million times over people who have no creativity. Because you can get this lightning in a bottle. You're not going to get it from Will Ospreay, who's a great athlete, but just says, I am an actual professional wrestler. That's what I do for a living. I'm not an entertainer. Wrong. Wrong. Do you know who's going to win when you go out there, Will? Just answer me yes or no. Do you know who's going to win when you go out there? The answer is yes, I do. Do you have some of the spots worked out in advance, or do you call them in the ring? Yes, I do. Okay, well, then it's not real. So you are an entertainer. You're pretending to fight. That would be for entertainment purposes. So I don't understand these people who think, oh, I'm just an athlete. I'm not an entertainer. Wrong. Bray Wyatt's an entertainer. He's not going to entertain everybody. I know people who hate the Beatles. I know people who hate the Rolling Stones. It's never going to be for everybody. But if you can get a majority of the people behind you or against you, whatever happens to be in wrestling, that they can market you. I'm sorry to tell you that that is way more valuable than I'm a professional wrestler and I work on my craft and I hit the gym every day and make sure I can do 30-minute matches. Nobody cares. At the end of the day, you ain't going to sell a tenth of the t-shirts of Bray Wyatt, and he's not even there, Mike.
Absolutely. And think of it this way. Think of it this way. Austin Creed, which is of course, Xavier Woods, and his partners, before they got together as the New Day, what were they doing? Austin, Xavier Woods was in TNA as Consequences Creed, right? He was a star, but he wasn't what he is today. And the two other guys, they were solid wrestlers. They were stars, but they weren't what they are today. You put those three guys together, and they're legendary. That's the difference.
Absolutely. Well, look at the marketability of a New Day. Look at the marketability. They would come out with something like a unicorn horn. I have no goddamn clue in the world where the hell that came from. I don't know what the New Day or the power of positivity or anything to do with professional wrestling has to do with somebody wearing a unicorn horn. But they came up with it, and it sold. There's a bazillion people bought them things. Then it was Bootio's cereal. Then it was the pancakes mix and the pancakes. Then it was something else. They just kept coming up with marketable catchphrases, marketable ideas, and the marketing just went through the roof for them. And as long as the marketing was going through the roof for them, they didn't even have to particularly wrestle. Now, you've got lightning in a bottle with them too, because you happen to have three really good professional wrestlers. So they could deliver, which helps. But even if they couldn't, even if they were a third of what they are in the ring, it wouldn't have mattered all that much because you were literally their cash cow for a while. You would watch the New Day come out, and the cameras would just pan around the audience. And there were times when I said, did every son of a bitch in this arena buy a New Day t-shirt? Because that's what it looked like. That's what it looked like. There were kids with unicorn horns. There were adults with t-shirts. All kinds of different gadgets that they came up with. Bootio's cereal. Pretty amazing, Todd. I mean, those guys for a while were the quintessential marketing.
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, with the New Day, I remember when they first came out, fans didn't like it. They didn't like their people. There was people got offended with this. We're doing this gospel thingy thing when they first came out.
Well, yeah, if you remember right with the New Day, when they first came out, they were supposed to be almost like the Nation of Domination. Xavier Woods had gotten in and said, we're not going to get anything unless we take it. And they were supposed to be sort of a militant, faction that was going to be, I guess, the bad guys. And then they said, well, maybe we'll make you more like the Baptist Church Holy Rollers. You come out dancing and singing about power positivity, but everybody knows you're a bunch of phonies and cheaters, and then that wasn't working. Everybody's booing that. And Xavier Woods said, we went to Vince McMahon and said, can we just try something different? And he said yes, just like he did with Stone Cold Steve Austin when Austin said, you know, can I try something different? And look what ended up happening, lightning in a bottle. But see, this is what I'm trying to say when I'm talking about creative people. You got to be able to rein in their ideas, narrow it down, but allow their creativity to flourish because it's going to help you. It's going to help you. At the end of the day, your boss is your boss. And they have to make the final decision. I get that. But there has to be input all over. If I'm recording and a producer says to me, I think we should add more guitar tracks in this. I think we should add a keyboard section. I don't automatically necessarily say, absolutely not, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. I wrote the song and I know how it goes. Well, let's hear it. Let's hear what you got in mind. And if it's good, well, then your creativity helped me. Because now you suggested that, and I added it, and I'm like, oh, you know what? That does work. That does sound nice. Or we modify and say, well, I don't really like that particular thing, but how about if we change it to this? What do you think of this? Oh, okay. And then the next thing you know, you've got both people's creativity working for a product. That's always better. That always turns out better. So will Bray Wyatt be coming in? Yes. Will he be coming in at Extreme Rules? I would say I hope so, and I'll tell you why. I don't think you want to stretch this out a hell of a long time more. You've got the lightning in a bottle. You've got everybody interested. Their interest is peaked. I think you can get away with it until Extreme Rules. If Extreme Rules comes and there is no reveal and you just go back to more QR codes and rabbits, then, Mike, I think fans might start to get a little agitated and say, F this.
Absolutely. Now, I'm going to assume, and if you remember, before they fired both of them, Bray Wyatt and Bo Dallas, there was a rumor of a Fiend versus Fiend thing, a feud between with Bo Dallas being one of the people under the, along with Bray Wyatt being one of the people under the mask, right? There was that rumor
yep.
out there. Now they bring him in, and look, here's something else to think about. I understand the way it's working out right now is that Eric Redbeard is on a per show basis with AEW.
Right.
That could end by his choice. That could end, and he could be another one they could bring back.
Absolutely. Absolutely, if that's what they want. I don't know what direction they're going in. I don't know if they're going in the cult leader Bray Wyatt direction, the funhouse host Bray Wyatt, the Fiend. I don't know what direction they're going in, or combination. Who knows? But that's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is we're all talking about it. The beauty of it is you've come up with an idea that's so creative that it sparked everybody else's imagination. That's the beauty of it. So when fans write to me and say, I think it's Baron Corbin coming back with Bray Wyatt and maybe Ryback and this guy, I'm like, I know that's not happening. But I love the fact that that has made you think. And now you're thinking, what could it be? What could it be? Let me try to decipher the clues for myself. Oh, I think it's this. I think it's that. The beauty, Tom, is regardless of how stupid the actual predictions of some people are, I say to myself, the beauty of it is you are predicting it. You are thinking. You are coming up with different things. You are interpreting it in a different way. And any time you can get wrestling fans to do that where nobody's agreeing and everybody's saying, I think it's this guy and I think this guy's involved and I think they're going to do this, I think they're going to do that, you've got them all engaged. You've got them all talking. That's the key.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm going to bring this up because I did mention this the other day. There's a YouTube channel that I subscribe to. I'm not going to say the name of it. But the guy who runs the channel has this thing where he kind of just says things just to say them. But it's effective because even sometimes how ridiculous it is, like Baron Corbin being the guy behind the QR codes and the red lights and the white rabbit and all that stuff, that's just ridiculous. But what are we talking about? Are we talking about the whole situation going on and the gimmick going on and the marketing going on right now? Or are we talking about AEW? Or are we talking about Sheamus versus we're talking about this? And that's really effective. I mean, I could tell you that regardless that Sandman could not wrestle, his entrance is what sometimes drove those people to the show because they were a part of his entrance.
Right.
As soon as that music hit, you knew you were going to be a part of that entrance. And regardless, before he even got in the ring, those fans were singing that song lyric by lyric until the end. And that was pure genius. That's exactly what New Day did. That's exactly what New Day did. The difference is that they had phenomenal matches, but their entrance is what people knew in that audience they were going to be a part of that entrance. And that those cameras panned around, and chances were you were going to be on TV wearing your bootios.
No, you're absolutely right. But here's something that the WWE wants to keep in mind as well. Bray Wyatt. And I'll stake my reputation that it is. Let me put it that way. If it's Bray Wyatt, do you think in your wildest dreams that when he sticks his nose through that curtain in any form, people are going to boo him? The roof is going to blow off that building. The roof is going to come off that building. So you've got yourself a little bit of a dilemma, and the dilemma is you have a decidedly heel character that really can't be a heel. And that's a bit of a problem, and you're going to have to deal with that. Now, Seth Rollins has already came out and said that. He said, I hated working with Bray Wyatt, not because I don't think he's talented, not because I don't think he's awesome, not because I don't think it's a good character, but neither one of us would ever come out looking any better because it's an impossibility to be a face and get over at all if you're wrestling Bray Wyatt because he's too popular. And then he has this character that really shouldn't be able to be defeated, and yet sometimes he's booked to lose, or you're booked to go over him, and you're like, this is not going to work well. I'm going to come out looking dumb, or fans are going to boo me. It's going to hurt him. And he said, so he's a very tough guy to work with. It's very difficult to plan a storyline, and it's very difficult to plan endings. And he's right. He's right as rain on that. And that's why the WWE has to have a very solid plan for him in place, Mike, or this could collapse.
Absolutely, and that's that they have to have a solid plan. And look, right now, Alexa Bliss is a heel, is a face right now. And if she eventually hooks up with Bray Wyatt, it's going to be hard to turn her heel because it's going to be hard to get people to boo Bray, right? I mean,
right.
if she ends up hooking up, now granted, they could play it off as well. Well, we know how they could play it off because, you know, the thing about the psychiatrist that came in, so-called psychiatrist that came in and got her mind right and all that stuff. But still, it's going to be tough if they hook her up with him to boo them.
Yeah, no, you're right. And, you know, speaking the other day, you brought in Karrion Kross and Scarlett, and in NXT, they were a very dark and somewhat occultish act. And you really sort of took that away from them. And they're still a little spooky, but they're not anywhere near what they were. And my thought process on this, Tom, is they nipped that in the bud because they knew Wyatt was coming back, and they said, we don't need two of this. So given the two, we'd rather have the Wyatt creepy, spooky stuff, and we'll modify Karrion Kross's to be more a little unusual, but not as spooky.
This is probably going to be unpopular, but I'm sorry, but Karrion Kross doesn't do it for me. I'm not engaged with Karrion Kross and Scarlett. I don't know. I hope they don't put him with Bray Wyatt, it wouldn't make any sense anyway because he's already there. If they were going to do that, he wouldn't be there at all. Same thing with Braun Strowman. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he's going to recruit a whole different group of people, but Karrion Kross definitely does not. What are you doing it at that point? And then you're 100% correct. Like the moment he peeks his face out of that curtain, it's going to be like a reception up to the same as Triple H returning after his injury in 2001. The roof is going to blow off the place, and everybody watching at home is going to get chills. So, I mean, I don't know what they're going to – in that sense, they've actually really backed themselves into a corner unless it starts off as a face and then he does something horrible to somebody, like, for instance, like Alexa Bliss. Now, Alexa Bliss is loved.
Well, here's the problem with this. She's already done something horrible to him. So now if he does something horrible to her back, people are going to say, oh, well, revenge. So even that might not work. I think what you have to do, if you want Bray Wyatt to come in and be successful, I think he has to be a guy of his own volition. He can't – not even a tweener, just not a heel or a face, just him. Because – it doesn't make any sense for him to be either, really. There's no way The Fiend and the things that Bray Wyatt does is a face gimmick, but he's too popular to be a heel. So I think you just got to hook him up with whoever and just say, we're going to use whatever supernatural or occultish character he's going to play if he does have a secondary character like The Fiend, which we don't even know. Maybe he's just going to come back as Bray Wyatt and wrestle as Bray Wyatt. We don't know. But if he is going to have a secondary alter ego, or whatever you want to call it, I think that has to be used sporadically. I don't think that should be on TV every week. I don't think it should be in every single Raw or SmackDown or whatever. I think that has to be just an occasional thing so that you basically, like Andre never lost, right, until Hulk Hogan. In the WWE anyway. He lost plenty of matches before that. But in the WWE, Andre was considered undefeated, but Andre wasn't on TV every week. Andre didn't take somebody on every single week. Andre was a special attraction. And it became, well, it's no big sin to lose to Andre. Everybody loses to Andre. It didn't matter how big of a name you were. You lose to Andre, and you're still a big name because everybody loses to Andre. Well, I think you might have to use, if he has that alter ego character, I think you might have to use that alter ego character like you used Andre. Not that often, but when he does show up, he does not lose. Until a really rare occasion, which is what ended up happening with Andre, right? So that's the way I would work it, Mike. And then just let the fans cheer for who they want to cheer for.
Right, and here's something else I'm thinking about. I know he's tied up with the Bloodline right now, but could you imagine a collaboration between Paul Heyman and Bray Wyatt in terms of creativity and things of that nature? Could you imagine that, how dynamic that would be, you know?
Well, if he did end up with a faction of some kind, I would think that they would want to put them against the Bloodline or maybe Judgment Day. And that leads me to my next topic. The rumor is that Triple H wants to push Finn Balor. Never said he wants to push Judgment Day. Never said he wants to push Damian Priest or Rhea Ripley. Said he wants to push Finn Balor. Finn Balor does not belong in the Judgment Day. Everybody knows that. It was a experiment that did not work. It's a horrible failure, as far as I'm concerned. He looks as out of place as he possibly can look. You know what he looks like? He looks like a boy band singer in a death metal group. That's what he looks like. That's exactly what he looks like. He looks like if Justin Timberlake joined Slayer. And you're just like, well, that's not working on any level. Well, this is not working on any level. And my assumption is this. My assumption is while Finn Balor is trying to recruit AJ Styles to join the Judgment Day, I think it's going to be AJ Styles that recruits Finn Balor to form another version of the Bullet Club. I think Finn Balor is losing at Extreme Rules. I think he's quitting, and I think perhaps the Judgment Day turns on him. and says, you're a quitter. You lost. You're not the man we thought you are. And he suffers the beatdown, same as Edge. But I don't see Edge losing. You don't bring Edge back to say, I quit. And I don't see Finn Balor, if he quits, having the same moxie with the Judgment Day. So something's got to give. And I think that's what's going to give. And they're going to need a leader. If they find a leader, then you could maybe have Wyatt's group against them, I guess. If you put them up against the Judgment Day, you got problems. I mean, if you put them up against the Bloodline, you got problems because the Bloodline are popular. So I'm not sure what you do with Finn. But, Todd, my assumption would be that you would rather have Finn out of the Judgment Day and with AJ than you would have AJ in the Judgment Day, because that one don't make no sense.
I'm totally right there, like you said. Finn Balor doesn't, like we've been saying this for a while now, I think it was a big mistake put Finn Balor in the Judgment Day. He doesn't fit. He don't look the part. He just don't fit with them.
No, and I know people keep saying, well, the demon. Yeah, I ain't seen the demon. Make him be the demon all the time, and then maybe it works. But it does not work this way, Tom. So I think the best solution would be all this time that Finn Balor's trying to recruit AJ, it ends up being AJ who has to pull Finn Balor's ass out of the fire and then recruits him to a form of some Bullet Club type thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Finn Balor doesn't belong in Judgment Day. Finn Balor's a decent – I can't even say that. He's an okay wrestler. He's not good on the mic, but if he joins with AJ, AJ is good on the mic. And AJ could talk for him as he stands in the background, much like the Bullet Club of old. You know who else doesn't fit in the Judgment Day is Dominic. I don't know what in the green hell they were thinking, but Dominic does not fit in it. And they're really pulling this thing, as we said on this show a couple of weeks ago, that Rhea Ripley is like a love interest of Dominic. That's
right.
Ridiculous.
Well, the only difference between Finn Balor and Dominic in Judgment Day is Dominic ain't staying there. Dominic ain't staying there. This is just an angle. It's much like when Daniel Bryan joined Bray Wyatt's group. He's not staying there. This is just a temporary thing. Finn is really the de facto leader. I know they say we don't have a leader, but come on. You know it's Finn. So I think that would be the best bet if they say, oh, you quit. And the Judgment Day attacks him in Extreme Rules and AJ Styles makes the save, then maybe we got something there. We'll see how that goes. Not sure. I don't have any information on that, but that makes sense. Because the other version is AJ and Finn fight, which could still happen, and then what? AJ joins the Judgment Day? What's he going to do, wear a black T-shirt and put black eye makeup? I mean, it's just, please. That's not going to work. So we already know, that, and it would be an overcrowded stable. It's not going to work. So we'll see. We'll see what happens with Finn Balor, but he's supposedly getting a push. So when I heard that, my thought process was they didn't say Judgment Day was getting a push. So for that reason, I'm thinking Finn Balor is going to be out of Judgment Day soon, which is the right decision, by the way. Definitely the right decision. Now, something else that I honestly didn't see coming, and I think this is a really, really good storyline now, better than it was before, is I did not see Jey Uso confronting Sami Zayn. And furthermore, which is excellent writing, by the way, for everybody who says, oh, you always piss on the WWE, here I am telling you, this is excellent writing. When Jey Uso said, you may have everybody else in this family snowballed, but I see right through you. And if you have any thought of betraying the family, you better think again. Sami Zayn never denied it. He never said, are you kidding me? This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I would put my life on the line for any of you guys. Haven't I proven myself? What more can I do, Jay? He just smiled at him. I don't think Sami Zayn's the good guy. I think Jay is going to be – we always thought Jay was going to be the one to turn on everybody and say, oh, I'm going to beat up Sami Zayn. And I don't know, man. I got this feeling that Jay is going to be the one who ends up being right all along. Because Sami didn't deny it. And anyone put in that situation, if someone said, I think you're a liar, I think you're trying to betray the bloodline, I think you're just a hanger-on who's looking for his chance to stab us in the back. If you were Sami Zayn, you would say, what are you talking about? I've done just exactly the opposite. Every single time you guys have needed me, I've been there for you every single time. And what more can I do to prove myself to you? He didn't do any of that. He just smiled at him like, okay, well, you talked to Roman about that. Meaning, I snowballed the leader. And unless you want to go against the leader's judgment, you better just keep your opinions to yourself. To me, Mike, that was great writing, and it smells of Sami Zayn still being a heel.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. Think about it this way. You got two things going on here. Remember, go way back to the beginning, the whole beginning of this thing when he was being mistreated, when Jay was being mistreated by Roman Reigns and all this stuff, and we're asking the question, well, why didn't he leave, right? Why didn't he? Because he was being mistreated, right? And so,
right.
So why didn't he leave? Now the shoe's on the other foot. Kind of, sort of, where he's trying to make the point that he doesn't trust this guy, and the way, and in some of these cases, the way Sammy's reaction gives you the ability to say that he's right, that Jay's right.
See, that's what it feels like to me. After that skit, and I was absolutely going toward Sami and Solo are going to be a tag team, and they're going to start to be more faces, and the Usos are going to turn more heel. I don't think that anymore. I think Jay's going to end up being right. Now, here's the beauty of this. We all knew when Jay Uso was first involved in this bloodline storyline before his brother ever got back that Jay Uso is awesome on the mic. He's also an awesome actor. His facial expressions, his body language, A-plus all the way, always has been. His brother Jimmy, B-minus. Sami Zayn, A-plus. Solo, A-plus. Paul Heyman, A-plus. You've got guys involved in this storyline that are so goddamn good on the mic and doing these skits that it sucks you in. You got the right people in the right storyline for this kind of drama because these guys do it well, really well. And that little hallway exchange was one of the best things I've seen in wrestling in 6 months, Tom. I mean, it made me do two things. It made me change my opinion on what might be happening, and it made me smile because I said, you know, I don't think you could have handled this any better than you did.
Oh, that hallway exchange was fantastic. And honestly, it kind of solidifies, to me anyway, that I think Sami Zayn is going to be the guy to be the one to turn because he has that feel to him. It's almost like, oh, okay, you trust him because he's all gung-ho about being in the bloodline, but eventually they're going to pull the trigger on that. And Jay knows it. That's why you could see his expressions, even when Roman gave him the shirt and you could see him standing in the corner like, my God, what next? And the hallway exchange was great, especially when Sami Zayn said, now, excuse me, I'd like to go into our locker room. And you could see the look on his face, and they made, like, eye contact, and Sami Zayn looked scared, like, uh-oh, he might be onto me kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
That is captivating. I was like, oh, man, what's going to happen next?
Right, because you've got so many players. You got Roman Reigns, who's the big boss of everything, and Sami's obviously won him over. You got Solo, who's brand new and kind of green, and Sammy instantly won him over by being sort of a butt kisser. You got Jimmy, who's going with the flow, saying whatever's good for the guy. It's only Jay who's like seeing through him. Paul Heyman a little bit too. Paul Heyman a little bit. So there's an interesting dynamic here, Mike, where there's a lot of varying emotions and there's a lot of different feels to the different characters in this story. So that's why this is a great storyline.
Absolutely. And the fact of the matter is there's also another branch on this tree. And you know what I'm going to say, that when, and we know it's going to be only a matter of when they bring her back, Naomi, you know, could possibly get involved in this at some point, you know. Now, will it be?
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, although now I'm hearing that I didn't hear about Naomi, but I heard Sasha's not coming. I heard Sasha had a very in-depth meeting and things didn't go all that well. So I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do with Sasha. You know, again, she's one of these people, wants everything her way and thinks the women's division revolves around her. And I think Triple H is a hardball player. You know, he's not going to do that. He's not going to promise her the moon and the stars and the sun and every show is going to revolve around you. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. At this stage of the game, she's like the female CM Punk. I'm not really 100% sure you want her back anyway. But Naomi, I'd like to see back. Absolutely. But, you know, fans are saying, well, if Sammy turns, what chance does he have in hell? I mean, after all, it's going to be a whole bunch of the bloodline against him then, and who's his faction? Yeah, you're right. I don't know. Now, some fans said, well, you know, Sami Zayn's got to be the one to beat Roman Reigns. Now, yeah, are you crazy? So you're going to let the guy who lost to Johnny Knoxville at WrestleMania be the champion, the guy who finally defeats Roman Reigns, who you have left undefeated for how long? He's going to be the big one to do it, the guy who can't beat Johnny Knoxville and a midget in a diaper. You ruined Sami Zayn's whole persona when you did that. That don't mean he can't do something that costs Roman Reigns the title. He absolutely can do that. But then you better have a faction set up for Sami Zayn and a good one. Because then you're going to have a bloodline feud, and that should be a lot of fun. Now, continuing with SmackDown for a minute, the Sheamus thing, yeah, a couple of the guys couldn't make it, you know, the hurricane and the whole horrible incidents. And that's why some people had to pull double duty, like Austin Theory and the Alpha Academy and stuff. But that's okay. I mean, it is what it is. But Sheamus, I think, went a long way to solidifying his position as face. You know, it was a little bit of a gray area where you're like, well, the Brawling Brutes aren't exactly faces. Butch is a nut, a psychopath, and Sheamus can be whatever, and Ridge Holland doesn't have much of a personality and seems more like a bully type guy. But then again, Imperium are certainly heels. So it was one of these gray areas. But on SmackDown Friday, I think Sheamus basically solidified the deal that the Brawling Brutes are faces. It's a really good segment. I think it made Imperium very, very big heels, which is great. I will caution the WWE about something, though. You got to watch it. Because Saturday night at a house show, Sheamus and Drew McIntyre teamed up, which is kind of cool, and just spanked Imperium. Beat them like dogs, which is a dark match and nobody's seen it, but, yeah, you know, still. You know, and Drew McIntyre ain't losing, so you knew that, but still, you got to be careful of that. But I do think he went a long way, Todd, to becoming a solid face this week.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, ever since that show in the UK, fans were going crazy ever since. For Sheamus.
Yeah, and I think, though, that, you know, American fans were a little confused. Is he supposed to be, are we supposed to be cheering for him? We don't like Imperium, but we also, these guys are heels. But now I think the WWE has clearly sent us the message, Tom, that the Brawling Brutes are no longer heels.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, it's cool that they teamed up, kind of made, because you know that was going to be a, you know that was going to be a hard hitting match, regardless if it was a dark match or not. But that was a, I didn't see it, but I'm pretty sure that the fans got what they bargained for, but they did move them out of the building. So.
Well, see, here's the situation. I think, Mike, in the long run, a lot of people are saying the logical conclusion to this is Sheamus pretty much has to win next week and go into Extreme Rules as the champion. I don't see it that way. I don't think he can lose. I think maybe you can do something where Imperium jumps in and then so do the Brawling Brutes and it just becomes all-out war. I have this sneaky feeling that they are probably going to be saving Gunther for someone else. And that someone else could be eventually Drew McIntyre.
It could be eventually Drew McIntyre. And whatever we said about Drew, it would make all the sense in the world to have Drew in the Brawling Brutes. Now, maybe change the name of that group, but again, it made all the sense in the world. He's got ties. He's from there. He's got ties. He's got strong ties with Sheamus and all that stuff. And Sheamus is going to be a – that group's going to be a face. And, hey, here's something else to think about. If eventually you're going to put one of those straps that Roman Reigns has around Sheamus as a final goodbye possible, yeah, that's possible, you know, wouldn't it make sense to have four guys and for a Bloodline versus Brawling Brutes kind of feud?
You would think so. I think Sheamus is probably going to have a career afterwards as a manager. I think that's why he initially, you know, took Ridge Holland under his wing, and then they came up with Pete Dunne, and I think they were thinking, well, we'll see if Sheamus wants to wrestle or can wrestle as much, and if he does, it won't be that many solo matches, and then I guess he caught his second wind here somehow, because he's been doing fine with these pretty physical matches. But at some point in time, I think they're warming Sheamus up to maybe just be manager or something of other people. So I think his career will go on long after he kind of semi-retires from active ring work. I still say this, and I know fans are not going to like this. I'm not 100% sold on Gunther. He's a hard-hitting guy. He puts on decent matches. He's definitely a guy who the fans dislike, which is good. He's a good heel. But he doesn't want to sell. And anybody can be a good heel if they don't want to sell. Anybody be a good heel is if you take a maneuver and just like fall down and get right back up, like, okay, well, that hurt for 1 second, but I'm fine now. We've yet to see him in actual, like, okay, I'm in trouble sort of mode. He never looked, and when he wins the matches, even if they're 25-minute hard-fought matches, he's just fine, and he can take the microphone and can walk around like he's not hurt. He tends to undersell. And maybe that's part of his gimmick. But in the long run, you're going to run across, you know, you can undersell to Sheamus. He's not a big name right now. In WWE, as far as the title pictures are concerned, maybe. But, I mean, you don't want to undersell to Braun Strowman. You don't want to undersell to Drew McIntyre because, you know, you might end up a few teeth short. I don't know if they're going to put up with that. You know, as much as they may like him, I think they want their stuff sold. And Gunther tends to undersell a lot, Tom.
Yeah, he certainly does. I'm not going to say he's the Taz of the WWE, but He's pretty close. After a hard-fought match against Sheamus, where his chest is about as red as Santa Claus's suit, he should be barely walking out of the arena like, oh, my God, I know I've just been in a fight. Nope, he just walks out on his own accord. It doesn't sell me like it did with, when Sheamus and Cesaro fought, or Sheamus and, Drew McIntyre fought.
Right. Yeah, his psychological, his psychology, I should say, sometimes seems off. I understand he says, well, I'm a big guy. You've lost a lot of weight. You're not that big anymore. You know, before he was a big, brutish-looking guy. Now he's not. And I think you got to sell a little more, and you got to work a little on your facial expressions, and you got to work a little bit on like, okay, well, I was limping the whole match because he worked on my leg, and now that the match is over, I'm just going to run back to the dressing room like nothing happened. I don't like when people do that. I think that screws up the psychology. And you're right. That match that they had, Gunther should have been helped back to the dressing room. I mean, they literally should have been holding him up. Instead, he marched back like, oh, I could do that again. And I think that undersell Sheamus, and if Sheamus did that to him, he wouldn't like it. So, yeah, there's a little problem there. We'll see where that goes because I don't know how friendly he is with the people in the dressing room, and I don't know how, close everybody is, but he's going to run across that one guy. Who ain't going to like that? And you may not, I mean, if you ever did it to Brock Lesnar, I hope you have your insurance bill paid. That's all I got to say. So I do think, Mike, he needs to work a little bit on the psychology of selling after the match.
Right. And I'll put it to you this way. If he did it to Roman Reigns, you better watch out,
Yep. But especially Brock. I think
Roman
Brock
Reigns
would drop
He's like to break one of his ribs with a spear if he tried it with Roman Reigns, But that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, this guy, look, he's not the best on the mic, but that's not his job. I mean, he's good, but the best guy
right.
in that group on the mic is, of course, Kaiser,
Yes.
The other guy,
yep.
Vince, he really doesn't speak a lot, but Kaiser's the guy, basically, he's the guy that sells all their matches.
Yeah, and he's very good at what he does. Listen, they're a great heel faction. Great heel faction. And I know that he's probably been told, don't show a lot of weakness. Wait. And I get that, but he didn't do it in NXT either. Even when he lost. I remember a match that he lost and still acted like, okay, well, I'm not hurt at all. And I'm like, well, at what point are you going to sell your opponent and say, okay, I just got my ass kicked? Ever? See, you get away with that in NXT where you're the biggest guy there. You're dealing with guys like Drew McIntyre and Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman, and God forbid, Brock Lesnar at some point. You're not going to be able to get away with that. I'm telling you, you're not. Do you remember the match where Braun Strowman, I think it was a Royal Rumble maybe, Braun Strowman hit Brock Lesnar a little bit hard, and Lesnar laid him out. I mean, he got nothing to lose, so you got to watch yourself. And the way the crowd is taking to Sheamus, if you do have someone else in mind for Gunther, this is the time. This is the time to have Gunther do something horrible to Sheamus that the fans really get upset about, and then all of that heat turns into a pop for the next guy that takes him, So if it is Drew McIntyre, they're supposed to be longtime friends and former tag team partners. If you did want to make Drew McIntyre somehow take on Gunther, if he was to injure Sheamus purposely with some help or whatever happened to be, it would be fun to watch that storyline play out where Drew McIntyre says, well, I'm going to get some revenge. You got some really good storylines going on in the WWE. You got some really good storylines. For a change. It's refreshing. It's actually refreshing. Now, obviously, on Friday, we'll be doing the Extreme Rules predictions and running down the card. But we also saw Ronda Rousey take on Natty. And we saw Liv Morgan come out and look a little more like her Harley Quinnish gimmick with a ball bat. And the only thing I can say is this. The WWE might have made the right move in the sense that they realize there's going to be people who are hardcore Liv Morgan fans, and then there are people who really don't think she's ready for this and really aren't into her. And so making her sort of a tweener sort of character might be the best thing. It might be the best thing. I mean, the crowd kind of 50-50 on her. So, Tom, maybe the best thing to do is just let her be a tweener. Let the crowd be 50-50.
Yeah, it actually, you know, I think it fits her better because, like you said, the crowd is 50-50. And she is, the proof is in the pudding when she came out with the ball bat. I didn't really expect to hear a pop for, even close to 75% for her side. But she, you know, it had impact and people were paying attention. And look, again, we're talking about it because a couple of weeks we weren't. A couple weeks ago, we weren't talking about this, but now we are. Now it's something that I think WWE definitely realized that Liv Morgan cannot be a full face, and she has to be that because most people dig the Harley Quinn kind of like crazy girl, and the other half don't care the other way, one way or the other. I mean, either way, what's Ronda? Ronda's a face, clearly, right? So to make her quite good guy.
They tried hard to make her a heel. It didn't work. Now, they should have known better than that. That is a mistake by the WWE. I mean, okay, so Ronda comes out, bucks authority, throws around security guards, but acquiesces and goes quietly when the police show up. That's a Stone Cold Steve Austin move, Todd, and Stone Cold Steve Austin was the face.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that was a Stone Cold Steve Austin move right there. And when I remember when there were times when Stone Cold Steve Austin turned heel back in 2001, fans were still chanting for him.
Yeah, Mike, you can't try to make Liv Morgan a face off making Ronda Rousey buck authority, throw around security guards, because that just makes her look badass and people like badass. So they kind of flubbed that.
They kind of did, and that's the thing. I mean, look, it didn't help when she came back and paid her fine, right? At that contract signing, she came back and dumped that satchel full of money on the table and basically paid her fine, right?
Right.
Now, that'd be sort of a Stone Cold Steve Austin move to do as well, just to thumb their nose at the authority. I'm going to pay this fine, but I'm going to cause you trouble as I'm doing it, you know, that type of stuff. So that didn't help it either when you got, you know, that. I mean, sometimes they kind of luck into things. I mean, they wanted her to be kind of a Roddy Piper, Stone Cold Steve Austin type of person, Ronda Rousey.
Yep.
Well, they've got that now. They've got that.
They absolutely do. So it's going to be hard to make anyone a cheerable face off of Ronda Rousey because a good portion of the crowd is going to cheer Ronda. Now, here's something interesting. This week did something I did not think would ever happen. I actually said, I think I'm beginning to dig the Maximum Male Models gimmick. And I'll tell you why it won me over. It won me over because those two guys are committed to doing this. Mansoor had a zero personality. Zero. As Mansoor. Mace looked cool in that Retribution outfit. I thought he looked really badass. And if they did something with him, I thought he could have really done something. But he never had a chance to take the microphone, and we saw him as an announcer for a while, but he never really had a chance to shine. These two guys this week with that skit, which was probably one of the dumbest skits anyone has ever written, put their heart and soul into it, and actually made me laugh. I actually watched him and said, I think they did an excellent job. I think they really did. And I'm starting to get that same vibe that I had from the Fashion Police, where you're like, okay, they're not going to win much, but they're sort of entertaining. And we could see some fun stuff from them in the near future. Now, quite obviously, we've seen the last of Max Dupri. He even took off the symbolic M belt and threw it on them. So I think we're seeing the return probably of L.A. Knight, Tom, which is fine with me because I think now that they got Maxine, they don't really need Eli Drake in there doing anything, and he was wasted in that gimmick anyway.
Yeah, it was bad, and you could tell he's not into it. You could just tell by his body language, and it wasn't working. Fans didn't care either way. Now that they have Maxine Dupri, they're going to go back to Eli Drake is going to go back to his NXT thing, and that's okay because now you're going to get to see him work in the ring instead of being a manager, which honestly doesn't suit him. The fact that he gets up in the person's face without giving him any kind of personal space at all, that was actually entertaining. But that's the only thing that's the only takeaway for me. But I'd like to see him better with his old NXT gimmick and get to see him work and not be a manager. I think they were just kind of, holding him back with this Maximum Male Models thing.
Or even better, just let him be Eli Drake. Doesn't have to be L.A. Knight. But, Mike, the greater point here is I think both of the Maximum Male Model characters really did an excellent job this week.
Right, and that's the thing. Now, my question is, can he be Eli Drake? That's the thing, because wasn't Eli Drake Impact allowed him to be that in the NWA or whatever, but would they allow him to be Eli Drake in the WWE? And look, here, this also sets up, we know what was going on with the Maximum Male Models and the guys, Humberto and Angel, right? Now,
right.
Wouldn't it be incredible if he ends up going to be their manager against the Maximum Male Models?
It would be interesting, or even better. I don't know about better, but a different branch on the tree could be that, you get these guys to be very, very lovable in the sense that they're clownish, but they're funny, which it looks like they can do. And then have Maxine turn on them and take Los Lotharios over them and say, look, these guys are much better than you and they're much hotter than you and you guys were never anything, and then you'd have a couple of face characters going against Garza and Humberto, which could work too. So there's a couple of branches on that tree, which is good. Now, I don't know if he can use Eli Drake, but I'll tell you this. Didn't he do the yeah at the end when he threw the belt down? Didn't I hear him go yeah?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also heard him call them dummies.
Dummies, yes, yes. And he wasn't
and
doing that.
That was a big part of Eli Drake. That was a big part of the dummies.
Yeah, absolutely. So I don't know. I don't know whether he can use it or not. I assume he probably can. I don't know if they hold copyright on stuff like that. WWE would, but I don't know about Impact. So anyway, aside from the problems with travel, which you can't blame the WWE for, obviously, this was a pretty good SmackDown. Now, I have my troubles with how they're portraying Austin Theory, especially if the rumors are true that John Cena is coming back to challenge him. And from what I'm hearing, that is in the works. He's lost to everybody. So how can he possibly beat John Cena? But at the same time, every single time he loses, I say to myself, Tom, there's no way they're treating this guy this way, and then he's not going to cash in successfully at some point. they're almost lulling you into a false sense of he'll never be able to win. Look, he always loses, but he's still got that briefcase. And I don't see them taking it down the road of he's a loser, he's a loser, he's a loser, and yup, he even lost Money in the Bank. I don't see him taking him down that road.
No, I don't either. And I actually, you know, I did actually say that, you know, to myself. I said, they're really kind of just bringing him along. I mean, Seth Rollins didn't win when he had the Money in the Bank briefcase for a year. Neither did Edge, you know, for as long as he had it. So this is, and they both cashed in successfully. So the fact that they're actually teasing it a couple of times where he, you know, bluffed that he was cashing in, but he got laid out. That's an extra. That's something extra. That's kind of entertaining. But there's no way that he's not gonna cash in successfully. And then to have that monger of the youngest Money in the Bank winner and the youngest WWE champion. You know what I mean? So it's definitely. Definitely sees something I see coming a mile away, as with, I'm sure, everybody on this panel.
Either that or he's not going to even be able to hold the Money in the Bank. Someone's going to challenge him for it, and he's going to lose it. That's the only thing I can think of if they've given up on Theory Mike. But other than that, it almost feels like they're trying to make you think he's hopeless in his chances to cash it in because they want it to be a swerve.
Right, and that's the thing. Now we know things changed when Vince stepped down and basically went away, right? Because he was Vince's guy. You know, he was going to be the next guy up. He was going to be basically what did Vince call Drew McIntyre at one point? The next big one or whatever it was, whatever the name, whatever that phrase that he called Drew McIntyre at the time.
Yeah, the chosen one.
You know? The chosen one. He was going to be the chosen one, right? And basically, at one point, didn't he say that? Didn't he actually say that to McIntyre at one point?
Yes.
Weren't you going to be the chosen one?
Yep. Sure did. Now, in another piece of good writing, and I don't know if any of you guys caught it or I'm making too much of it, but in another piece of what I consider very good writing, you were going to send Johnny Gargano, Kevin Owens out there and team up with, Drew McIntyre, was it? And backstage while they're talking, McIntyre said, look, I know you and I, Kevin's had our problems here, but we're on the same page, right? And Gargano speaks up and says, oh, no, we're on the same page. And Kevin Owens walks away and says, oh, yep, same page, same book. And to me, that felt like Kevin Owens was saying, yeah, screw both of you. I don't know. But it seemed that way, and it's real weird because I thought they were really promoting Kevin Owens and Gargano as a tag team, but Owens felt weird, and they gave him that to say on purpose, Tom.
Yeah, I caught that, and that was something that I think that holds, like, Kevin Owens – kind of like careless attitude, he's all about himself kind of deal. I don't think anything is going to come of that. I think that was just maybe just a tease.
What I think might come of that is if you're going to let Sami Zayn do something horrible to the bloodline, he's going to need allies, and one would be Kevin Owens, who's his best friend. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. You'd need more than him. You need at least two more people, right? So I don't know, one more person at the very minimum, but probably two. And I don't know who those two would be. Now, I'll still say I think Hit Row should be heels. I just don't see them. Number one, they're not that charismatic. They're not the New Day. They're not even the Street Profits. They give off a different vibe. New Day always gave off a vibe of, we're really happy and we're best friends and we're like totally having fun and we're just trying to entertain the audience. And even the Street Profits came up with that vibe of, we're trying really hard to entertain you. We're trying really hard to get a laugh or let you guys have a good time. Hit Row comes off as, we're the shit and you're not. And I don't see how that's a face gimmick. I just see them, I don't know, Mike, I see them as heels, and I don't know why they're insisting on pushing them as faces.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And think about it. Even when they had Swerve Strickland, they came off the same way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. And, by the way, that's another guy I've heard rumors about not being happy in AEW, but that's for another day. But, yeah, you know, these guys don't – I mean, like you said, their catchphrase – the Street Profits catchphrases have come on – have caught on. And it's going to be – I mean, to me, it's going to be hard to flip them heel, even though they sometimes act heelish. And especially the fact that they're not going to want to flip Bianca heel anytime soon. But they may want to try and split up the Street Profits and flip one of them heel. But that's another argument for another day. Yeah, these guys, the Hit Row comes off as heels. But again, what can you do? Because it seems like the people somewhat want to cheer them.
I don't know. I'll tell you the truth. If I had the book, I would, over the next couple of months, maybe even just a month, start making them a little more annoying, especially throwing a little shade at the Street Profits, especially if you're going to take the belt off Bianca and give it to Bayley, which I suspect you might. Then you could have literally the Hit Row attack the Street Profits when you had like a, you know, 8-man tag team match and turn on them. And you would have the 3-on-3 because Bianca would defend her husband, obviously. So you'd have a mixed 3-on-3 feud there. And I think the fans would definitely side with the Street Profits. And you've built up Hit Row enough, so you would think, well, okay, this is going to be a tough series of matches, and it would be a really good series of matches. And I'd much rather see that than them go against the Usos. I don't want to see Hit Row against the Usos. I know that's what they probably are trying to get to. I don't want to see it. I don't think it would be anywhere near as interesting as the Street Profits against Hit Row. That's, in my opinion, where the money would be, where you'd have a great, great match, and you'd say, this is going to be a feud for the ages. Because they just rub you the wrong way. At least they rub me the wrong way, Todd. I don't know. I don't know how you feel about Hit Row, but I don't get that sense that they're trying to be like, we're trying to entertain the audience. It feels like a heel sort of persona of, we think we're better than you.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, I would have Hit Row come back as heels in the first place and not as faces. And I would go the same route as you. We would go with Hit Row as well.
I think it would make a hell of a feud, Tom, and one that the fans would be interested in.
Yeah, they're annoying, no doubt. I personally don't think they should have even brought them back, but the fact that they did and trying to make them faces, and they're clearly heels. And they're all, their gimmick is like they're kind of bullies. So it just doesn't work. It doesn't work for me. And to have them face the Street Profits, you know what's going to, you know, I mean, the Street Profits are loved. So it doesn't really, I mean, if the Hit Row is supposed to be faces, then I don't know what they're, I think they made a mistake with bringing them back as faces, and they're not pulling the trigger on the heel gimmick, and they're just annoying anyway. They rub me the wrong way, and they're just like, they got very punchable faces, almost like Humberto when he first came in.
Yes, and look what they did with Humberto. They turned him heel, right? See, that's what I'm saying. These guys come off with a really cocky attitude that, and so does the, you know, their manager. They come off with a really, I don't know, they'd be very easy to turn heel. Very easy. And everybody loves the Street Profits, and certainly everybody loves Bianca Belair. I will tell you this. Bianca Belair was able to adjust from being very, very much heelish in some of the things she said and coming off as really annoying, much like the hit row, she was able to adjust to the point where she could potentially soon be one of the most popular female wrestlers ever in the WWE. Fans love her, and she delivers really good matches, and she's really got the shit down on the stick now. She's saying just enough to sound confident without sounding egotistical or arrogant. And, Mike, she has a natural charisma about her. She could be a real blue chipper.
I think so, too, and that's the thing. And I mean, look, we know what her husband can do, and we have a pretty good feeling about what they might be trying to do with her husband, right? And in terms of maybe pushing him as a singles guy, right? So, yeah, we'll see what happens with that. And you're right, she has clearly adjusted very nicely to what they're doing with her.
Absolutely, which is a credit to her, because that was flying in NXT, and she was just getting along fine, doing exactly what, you know, we said was kind of heelish. And she came to the WWE and tried it, and it came off even more heelish. And it came off like, you all stink, and I'm not afraid of anybody here, and I'm above everybody. And I said, you're going to have to change this up. If you're a face, you got to change this up. And you got to be confident and strong, but yet a little bit humble. And she's done it. She's done it. And that's a credit to her. I honestly think she can be one of the top people for a long, long time in WWE. I think she's more valuable than either one of the Street Profits, quite honestly, to the Federation. Because the women's division, I mean, when's the last time we saw some of these people? What the hell happened to Aaliyah? Now I'm hearing that Shotzi Blackheart's going to be teaming with Raquel Rodriguez. Well, I'm to Aaliyah. Where's Dana Brooke? Where's somebody? I don't even remember the last time I saw Tamina Snuka. So if you're going to be not using, I don't even remember the last time I saw Carmella. And I guess the injury to Queen Zelina is, I don't know what happened. A building must have fell on her. I recovered from sepsis, which kills 70% of the people it infects quicker than she recovered from whatever the hell's happening to her. I don't know what the hell happened to her. But she's gone. So if you're going to – and Asuka, God love her. By the way, happy birthday to Asuka. She's 41. She looks half that age. So good for her. She wrestles half that age. So good for her. But still, she's 41, which means she's not going to want to do this forever. She probably got a couple of years on her contract left. I don't know what she'll do. So they're going to need people like Bianca Belair, Mike, and they're going to need people to step forward and be that new charismatic, you know, top echelon of the women's division. I think Bianca can be that.
Right, and that's the thing. I think Bianca can be that. Now, granted, it's gonna come down to whether or not and when, how long she does it for. It's going to come down to whether or not she decides, well, I'm going to want to have a baby. Well, I mean, it's not like she can't do that and come back like Becky Lynch did. But we saw what they did with Becky Lynch when she came back and what she looked like and all that stuff, and that it just didn't work out. But yeah. I don't think they'd make that same mistake with this new regime wouldn't make that same mistake with Bianca.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I don't think Bianca's been injured since she's been in this federation, has she?
No, we've seen a slew of injuries over the last several years, and none of them have been Bianca Belair.
Yeah, so that's valuable too. I mean, she's very physical in her matches, and she'd be somebody that you'd look at and say, she's going to get injured. She's going to suffer her share of injuries. I don't recall any. And if they were minor, Tom. They didn't keep her out long. So, I mean, that makes her a valuable commodity.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is a testament to her ability. I just wanted to comment on what you just said before. It's a testament to her ability and her character and everything about her that she was able to make that adjustment from the heelish gimmick in NXT to the main roster. And I don't believe she's been injured. I guess I'd have to go back and check, but I don't believe she's been injured since she's been up, and that's been a good 3 years. So that's awesome. It's very valuable. And you know who else is going to probably be coming back is Charlotte. That's going to add to the women's division as well. I honestly can't wait for Charlotte to come back because I'd like to see Charlotte versus Bianca. That would be something. And even Charlotte versus Bayley would be something. It depends on how they bring her back, really.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Some people are saying that could happen at Extreme Rules, that you might see the return of Charlotte Flair, which would not surprise me. And of course, that's going to lead to speculation that, you know, Andretti apparently wants out of AEW. He wants to be with Charlotte, which I don't blame him. Put him back with Los Lotharios and form some kind of a faction there. Got to use Angel Garza more. Telling you right now. And not because he cut a promo for us, because long before he cut a promo for us, we said he had the best debut on Raw ever. He's a major talent. I'm not sold on Humberto. He's okay. He's much better as a heel. But Garza has a charisma that you can absolutely market. And I don't know why they're relegating him to worthless tag team status. And I hope they use him more. I really do. But, yeah, I mean, we're seeing some people that have been out a long, long time, like Zelina Vega. And, again, I haven't seen Carmella in a long time. Aaliyah's kind of gone. And I haven't even seen Raquel Rodriguez on TV in a little while. I don't know whatever happened to the 24/7 belt. They're just not even featuring that at all. I haven't seen R-Truth. I haven't seen Tozawa or Reggie at all. Mike?
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And that's the thing. I just don't know. And here's something else to think about. Correct me if I'm wrong, but before Moxley went to the WWE and he was in, Heartland Championship Wrestling, wasn't he in a faction with Eli Drake and Pepper Parks?
I'm not 100% sure. I'd have to go back and look. It sounds right. It sounds right, but I'm not sure. Todd, what'd they do? Throw away the 24/7 belt?
Last time I heard, they sent all those the 24/7 belt over to the show, the main event.
Oh, is that what they're doing with it? Because I don't watch main event, so that's probably why I don't see it. So maybe them guys are over there. Nobody watches main event. That's a shame. Anyway, folks, I'm going to quickly go around the horn. I'm going to give SmackDown a B+. I actually enjoyed it, Mike.
Yep, I actually enjoyed it as well. And we all know who's coming. You know, we all know what those things mean. And if they can find a way to use those QR codes and things of that nature, in terms of anybody else but Bray Wyatt, good on them.
Absolutely, and they can thank Bray Wyatt for it, by the way. Todd, what's your rating this week?
I got to give it a B+ as well.
Yeah, I was entertained, and I'm giving it a little extra because I know some people got stranded in Florida and the show couldn't be exactly as it wanted to be, but it still managed to be entertaining, Tom. What's your rating?
I'll give that a B+ as well. I, you know, considering the circumstances with the folks that were trapped because of travel, I think it was a very entertaining show. Some things I didn't particularly care for, but what did it for me was Shotzi Blackheart's entrance, which is actually the first time I was seeing it because I didn't see it in NXT. So that was entertaining to me, and fans seemed to love it. So that was. To me, honestly, that was I think that got the biggest pop of the night, honestly. But
yeah, she got her tank back, which is pretty cool. Hopefully they keep that going, and we'll see if Shotzi can get over with the crowd. She always was in NXT, so let's see if she can do that in WWE. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening. We'll be back here on Tuesday with the Monday Night Raw Report. Hey.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.